ESPN College Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to an emergency edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast for July 1st, 2022. I'm Adam Rittenberg. She is Heather Dinich. And we have realignment yet again, Heather, in college football, college athletics, I should say. And it's a big one. As on June 30th, on Thursday, the Big Ten added it's still amazing to say, added USC and UCLA as new members beginning in the 2024-2025 athletic year. So USC and UCLA will be playing Big Ten football in the 2024 season. Just an incredible day of news and reaction. And I'm out here in California on a kind of semi-vacation. I was playing golf on the third hole when I first heard got a text about this. I texted you. You were understandably shocked. A day later, what do you think about what went down on Thursday with the latest major move in realignment?
Wow, where to begin unpacking that question? Like I told my mother-in-law, it's the biggest news in college sports since last year when Oklahoma and Texas basically did the blueprint for this. I spoke with a source in the Pac-12 who gave me what I thought was the quote of the day when he said, "We got Soonered and we got Horned." This is Bob Bowlesby all over again. And, you know, it was in the fact that this happened very quickly and blindsided a lot of people in the Pac-12, including Commissioner George Kliavkow. So I think in the long term, to get right into the nitty gritty, what this does is obviously further separate the Big Ten and the SEC as the wealthiest and richest and biggest. But I think it puts them on a path to 220-team leagues. And I think everybody else will be just fine, but they'll be mediocre fine, and they'll survive, and college football is going to separate into its own entity and organization. And I think that's the big picture. I'm not sold on this is the first step in a mega conference, super semi-pro, NFL light type thing. Are they bigger, badder, and better than everybody else? Absolutely. But I think that college athletics is going to continue to thrive and survive, albeit in a very, very different way.
Well, see, that's interesting. Let's start there, because I felt with this happening that, you know, the Super League, or at least the two Super Leagues, are inevitable and much sooner than I thought were necessarily going to take place. And a lot of people are saying, even on the record, you know, Mike Bone, the USC athletic director, said, you know, as soon as Texas and Oklahoma made that move, you looked at the future and saw two conferences to be a part of. And so I do wonder if these stay at 16 team conferences, I'm talking about the Big Ten and the SEC, or if they get to 20, as you just said, and you're not part of one of those leagues, how viable are you in this space as a football program, as an athletics program? Are you okay? Is, you know, if you're not part of that group of 40, let's say, you can you survive long term? And I just feel like we're going to see such a scramble if indeed there are 8 spots to fill. If there's 4 in the SEC and 4 in the Big Ten before they say doors are closed, we are done, this is our group, we're moving forward. I just don't know, if you're not part of that, how viable your future is as a program.
We are going to see a scramble. And no one I talked to yesterday said that they think realignment is over. I think that's foolish. I think everybody's sort of trying to figure out what the best move is for their respective conferences. But at the same time, I'm not going to hit the panic button on, quote, everybody else. Because when you look at a prestigious academic university like Cal, when you look at some Olympic sports programs throughout the Pac-12, baseball, softball, swimming and diving, I just find it very hard to believe that there's going to be so much damage done that that's not sustainable. Now, the reason I think that it will continue to work is because in a totally unrelated and coincidental conversation I had with Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith early this week, we talked about his plan about moving college football under the CFP umbrella. And I said, what happens to those other sports? And he said they would continue to operate the same way under the NCAA. It would host those championships, et cetera. But what really stood out to me about that conversation was he said, we have to protect football because that revenue does pay for all those other sports. So you put football under the umbrella of the CFP. He said the presidents who control the playoffs still continue to have oversight of the whole sport, followed by the commissioners, followed by another group of, I want to say DOBOs, right? Director of Basketball Operations, the FOBOs, right? To me, it's a bunch of Merton Hanks, one for each FBS conference. And you have those guys who are doing the scheduling, the rules. You have the officiating, enforcement, all of that under that umbrella for football. And then that helps sustain those other programs. Now, is there going to be a financial gap between everybody else and those leagues? 100%. The rich get richer, and you heard it all before, blah, blah, blah. But I think that they can continue to operate, function, and host those other sports in that particular model, especially while the NCAA is hosting the men's basketball tournament, men's and women's basketball tournament, you know, the World Series, softball, baseball, all those other things. To me, that makes sense. My bigger question, Adam, is how are the beach volleyball teams going to fare in Piscataway?
Absolutely. I mean, there, and that's the thing with the Pac-12 as a whole, but especially with at least a program like UCLA. I mean, if you look at UCLA's history as an overall athletic program, there are few, if any, around the country that can match them for your kind of collective national success, success in the overall number of sports. UCLA has been the dominant softball program. They've been the dominant track program. You know, beach volleyball, I'm sure they've won, or USC has won. So that part of this is tricky. And I don't know, my eyes rolled a little bit when I read some of the statements that came out from the both sides, but even then the Big Ten about, oh, we're going to keep student athlete welfare at the forefront, and we're not that concerned about the logistics. There's some real logistical issues to sort out, but this is obviously a very big move for football and for the upcoming media rights negotiation. But I wanted to get back to where you started, Heather, mentioning Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC last year and comparing it with what we saw on Thursday. You know, what similarities were there? What differences were there in terms of the timeline of how this played out? I mean, that move happened about 11 months ago, you know, kind of right around media days, preseason practices. This move took place on the last day of June, one day before today, which is actually the one-year anniversary of George Kliavkov starting his position as Pac-12 commissioner. You know, again, the summer realignment crazy continues, but if you look at those two sets of moves, what stands out from a similarity standpoint, and then what's different?
Well, what stands out to me from the similarities is just how off guard a lot of people in high places were in the Pac-12. I mean, and it's also kind of funny to me that Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, was at Wimbledon when this all went down. Just fascinating. But the biggest difference to me, Adam, is a key one, because when OU and Texas went down, the commissioners were almost literally at the table for college football playoff expansion. This is a quiet time in terms of those talks. This was a time where I was talking to George Kliavkov this week about how optimistic he was about negotiating the next TV deal, with a very cognizant awareness of, I know the Big Ten and the SEC are separating. We're going to be third, and we're going to be a strong third. And with USC and Lincoln Riley and all of those things going on, it was a very positive outlook towards the future. And it wasn't about college football playoff expansion, though we did talk about that. And when OU and Texas made that announcement, Kliavkov, to use his words, said that that was the proverbial turd in the punch bowl that derailed expansion talks. And I don't think that's not this impact. This impact is on the SEC and the Big Ten separating themselves. This is like the second piece of that puzzle, with those conferences flexing. And where you saw the OU Texas domino with the American Athletic Conference, and you saw the Big 12 try to piece it together, which they did with what was available. This, I feel like the next dominoes to fall are big names. We're not talking about, with all due respect to BYU, Houston, Cincinnati. In my head, we are talking Notre Dame, Clemson, Miami, Florida State, Oregon, Washington. Where are their homes going to be? I think it's a different reaction.
Yeah, and I want to get into all those names, but just getting to this point about the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and maybe what's different about this major realignment move, even from last year. I think you just look at these two leagues and how close they've been, even before the alliance, which is being mocked more than ever now, because it was formed in part to prevent further realignment and poaching each other's leagues. And while nothing was signed, you had this happen less than a year into that alliance partnership. But you know, these leagues are aligned philosophically. They have the Rose Bowl tradition, and we don't know what's going to happen and the impact on the Rose Bowl once USC and UCLA, which by the way plays its home games in the Rose Bowl, move to the Big Ten. The word that somebody who longtime college athletics source told me this morning said there's more collateral damage with this realignment move than maybe any other, including Texas and Oklahoma. You know, do you think that's the case, or is it on par as far as how much it damages one league or another league or an institution like the Rose Bowl or just the relationship between commissioners and conferences?
I think the most honest answer I can give to that question is time will tell. Can the ACC somehow lure Notre Dame in and say to its other teams in the league, hey, you know what? Everything's going to be okay because we got the Irish. I find that hard to believe, but let's give it a skinny minute, see what happens. Can the Pac-12 retain schools like Oregon and Washington and bring in Baylor and Oklahoma State and try to make itself whole? So, to me, that's the question, is how do the Pac-12 and ACC respond? My gut reaction is yes, this is more collateral damage because it is more big names. But I think we kind of have to wait and see. To me, Notre Dame is such an X factor. Does the SEC get Notre Dame? Does Notre Dame stay independent? All options are on the table right now, it feels like, for the Irish. And if you're the Big Ten and the SEC, I would think, and the ACC, you're coming hard after them more than ever before. So I think, you know, and we look at the Big 12 and everybody's like, oh, the Big 12 is doomed. Well, they kind of pieced it together and they're moving along and they're all right, but it's not the way it was. But they're okay. Is it kind of be that shoulder shrug? I don't think so. I think it's definitely going to be far more impactful than that, but let's see where all the other chips fall.
So there's obviously some buzz about Washington and Oregon, and will they be next to make the move to the Big Ten? You know, they would seem to fit, especially with their academic profiles, their athletic profiles, their connections already to USC and UCLA. But you bring up Notre Dame, and that's the school that I heard most in talking to some Big Ten sources after the news broke on Thursday, that Notre Dame, which the Big Ten pursued twice unsuccessfully in the 90s, the school that everybody wants to have in their conference from a full membership standpoint, what do they do now? Because their independence in football is central to who they are, their fans, their alumni, their former players. You read any history about Notre Dame and it's all about football independence. But I think when I look at the financial realities of where the Big Ten and the SEC are going, even though Notre Dame will go back to the negotiating table for their media deal with NBC in the next few years, I think if you're Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, and the other important people around that university, isn't it more how much money are we willing to leave on the table? Because the right financial move for Notre Dame, to me, Heather, and I'm curious your thoughts, would be to join the Big Ten. And I know they've been resistant to that in the past. They are not philosophically aligned with the SEC. I just can't see that happening. But the Big Ten now with arguably, and many people would say it's not even arguably, Notre Dame's top rival in the conference coming in 2024 in USC. You already have long-term rivalries with schools like Michigan State, Purdue, and Michigan. Notre Dame and Ohio State are opening the season against each other this year in Columbus. Why not make that move? Because I don't understand. I would not understand at all them fully joining the ACC. All due respect to the ACC, you're just putting yourself in a position where you're going to fall further and further behind financially. To me, it's probably staying independent, renegotiating your NBC deal, or joining the Big Ten and just raking in a ton of money for the future.
So my gut says their next move is a little bit of patience to see exactly what the Big Ten's TV deal is when that's announced. And I don't know when that's going to be exactly. I want to say the Sports Business Journal earlier today reported it's probably closer to August or somewhere around Labor Day. And it all makes much more sense now as to why we haven't heard exactly what that deal is. But I can tell you what Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick has told me this spring on the record about what would make them not want to be independent anymore. He said there are three specific things. One is the loss of a committed broadcast partner, which I don't think is going to happen. Somebody's always going to want to broadcast Notre Dame. Two, the loss of a fair route into the postseason. Everyone I talk to at Notre Dame thinks they can win under Marcus Freeman and still be a playoff contender 4 years for. So I'm not concerned about the playoff at Notre Dame. The third thing is such an adverse financial consequence that you had to reconsider. Those are Swarbrick's exact words. Now, is that adverse financial consequence simply watching everyone else get so much richer? And like you said, just turning down an opportunity to be a part of that. I mean, Swarbrick's a smart guy. He's a lawyer. He's got more degrees than I have on my pinky. I mean, he's not naive to what's going on here. But I also don't think that there's going to be a knee-jerk reaction because we look at this through tunnel vision, and Notre Dame looks at this also as a university-wide historic, this is our place in life, right? And so to me, it makes all the sense in the world from a business perspective and a college football perspective that they join the Big Ten. But I'm not Jack Swarbrick. But I think he certainly would consider that. He, like every athletic director and university president in the country, they're paying attention to the Big Ten and the SEC. And I think that they, just like USC and UCLA, would tradition in order to better position themselves financially in the future. But you never know. You don't know about it. Because they could, I don't see them joining the ACC though.
No, I don't either. I mean, one point that was raised to me this morning, again, from this long-term administrator, is that Notre Dame, unlike a lot of schools, you know, they get their funding as an athletic department from the school. So they don't have to function independently. You hear about a lot of, you know, Florida as an example. They have to function as an independent athletic association. So if they don't have money on their own, they're kind of screwed. Notre Dame's not in that position. Their school brings in way, way more money than we're even talking about as far as these athletic distributions from television revenue. So they, if any school can sort of handle leaving tens of million dollars on the table, Notre Dame is that school. But it's going to be a fascinating decision coming up for Jack Swarbrick, who realistically is towards the end of his tenure as Notre Dame athletic director. So they're certainly one to watch. But I wanted to raise something that you tweeted yesterday after the news about Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner. You tweeted, Heather, remember when everyone was piling on Kevin Warren during the pandemic? Yeah, he probably doesn't either right now. Certainly in reference to the criticism that he and the Big Ten received for essentially canceling the 2020 season before they brought it back several weeks later and they played a shorter schedule. But for some in the Big Ten, Kevin Warren will never be forgiven for his handling of that season during the pandemic. However, we're sitting here today and he's just made, you could say the biggest one-day realignment move in Big Ten history, because if you think about it, you know, Penn State came in on its own. I think Penn State and is kind of comparable to USC as far as a mega brand in college athletics. Nebraska, a notable brand, came in on its own, but no one has added a package like USC and UCLA to this conference, and Kevin Warren was able to pull it off. And so I'm curious how he'll be viewed now among Big Ten fans. I was told, I'm sure you heard this too, Heather, it wasn't like Kevin Warren was out seeking new members. I mean, I think this came from the USC-UCLA side. Certainly the media rights situation factors into it, that they're in the middle of a media negotiation with Fox kind of driving the bus there. But how does the Kevin Warren era change, or how has it changed now that we know these two schools are entering the conference?
Well, everybody wants to be the best friend now. How many phone calls is he taking right now? Hey, take me. You know, I mean, clearly it has changed. And I think it should fairly change in the court of public opinion as well, because when this is all said and done and the Big Ten has however many teams it has, whether it's 16, 18, 20, and what is reportedly going to be the first $1 billion TV contract. I mean, dude did his job. Who's talking about what didn't happen in 2020 after all that? To me, it should be a blip on the radar. Because by the way, that he was on the job for like a skinny minute. And for every commissioner trying to navigate through COVID-19, how quickly people forget how difficult that was for everyone involved, not just the commissioners, the coaches, the players, everyone who touches collegiate athletics at any level who survived 2020. I mean, wow. And so to get through that, put it in the rearview mirror and position his conference as one of the best, wealthiest, strongest, and secure for the future. Check the box, job done.
Yeah, and job may just be starting in that realm. I mean, from what we know about Kevin, I think you and I have a similar view of him just from a personality standpoint. I think he's generally conservative. He has a legal background. I don't think he's somebody that's looking to add and will be very methodical. That's the word you often hear about him in terms of how he operates. And I'm sure they were methodical as much as they could be in this situation. But you're adding two pretty much no-brainers in a USC and a UCLA, despite the, you know, taking the geography outside of it. In terms of institutions, UCLA is arguably the best public school in the country. Michigan might disagree with that, or Cal or Virginia. And then USC has increased its academic profile, and it's one of the top five, or certainly top 10 college football brands anywhere. So now if you're Kevin Warren, and you know, Notre Dame, sure, no-brainer, but these other ones, Washington, Oregon, your schools in the ACC that might be looking for ways to get out of their long-term grant of rights. You look at North Carolina, would be a natural fit in this new Big Ten. Virginia could be a natural fit in this new Big Ten. If you're Kevin Warren and you're competing directly against Greg Sankey, let's face it, it's those two leagues and everybody else. You mentioned the number 20. How are you getting there and how fast are you getting there?
Well, I think part of that depends on who's reaching out to you. I mean, gosh, there's so much legalese involved in it, because you mentioned those ACC schools. They are technically bound contractually through 2036, which is, wow, right? Not that you can't challenge that or fight it. And we've seen this before here in Maryland. They paid the exit fee in the Big Ten. That's a pretty penny. I mean, that's significant. So I just think that while everybody's frantic about it and talking about it and everything, the actual logistics of how quickly it can happen to me are not that fast when you're talking about ECC schools because of the entangling that has to do with that they would have to do. But if you're talking about Oregon and Washington, to bring it up to 18, and you've got Bill Knight money in your back pocket, and you can pay what you need to pay and do what you need to do, that seems like an easier transition to me. But then the other question is, are we playing chess here? Is the SEC going to call Florida State and Clemson and help them with the buyout money and the exit fee? And then all of a sudden the SEC is up to 18 teams before you can blink, and they've got the state of Florida, literally the state of Florida. So I don't know. It's a hard question to answer, but I don't think we can forget about the contractual agreements and the legal aspect of it. I remember when OU and Texas first question was, whoa, how fast is this going to happen? And the buyout fee and the TV contract. I mean, it still won't surprise me if it happened before 2025. That's their target date, but can the lawyers figure it out?
Is it a touchdown? Yes! The ESPN College Football Podcast.
Yeah, I wonder now that we know for sure August 2nd, 2024 is the official date that USC and UCLA enter Big Ten competition. It feels to me like that is going to be the date that that Oklahoma and Texas also enter the Big 12. It's obviously not happening this season. I think next season may be a bit wishful thinking. So you do wonder, Heather, 2024 is that new reality of when we know when these teams are where they're going to be. And I guess the next question is, how does that impact the future of the postseason? Because I want to get into the relationships between these commissioners in a minute, but I first wanted to ask you how you think, you know, just the news yesterday and where this is headed with these two leagues positioned so far ahead of everybody else in terms of revenue. We'll see if they're way ahead of everyone in terms of competition. The SEC has certainly shown its weight, but you know, the Big Ten has pretty much been Ohio State and everybody else in terms of the national stage. Michigan made a step forward last year, but I there was an interesting quote from Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith earlier today on Friday at a news conference in Columbus talking about USC and UCLA entering the conference. He said, for Ohio State, it provides two other schools that can carry some weight. Ohio State has been a program for the Big Ten that has been at the top of the pyramid and carried a significant amount of weight in the value of the Big Ten. Now we have two others who can contribute to that weight. We're really excited about that. That's just reality. So it's an interesting comment there about, you know, maybe the Big Ten's positioning for the future postseason. The SEC is already well positioned. How do you think what happened on Thursday will shape the future of the playoff?
You know, it's really interesting to me that Gene Smith said that, because it's kind of funny. Our colleague Kyle Bonger tweeted, you know, maybe if USC and UCLA would have been better at football over the past decade, this wouldn't have happened. Like, when we talk about the competitive aspect of it, that's a whole other conversation in itself. Like, USC has Lincoln Riley and everything's great, and they've got all these good players and their roster changed overnight. Everybody in the Pac-12 was very excited about USC. I can tell you that. But UCLA under Chip Kelly, they're getting better. I got to see them play Oregon at home last year. They're a good team. He's a good coach. But I mean, they have a lot to prove. That conference with USC and UCLA had a lot to prove. It's got more to prove without them. How are they going to fare in the Big Ten? You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's going to be fun football, and I'm excited to find out. But at the end of the day, I think that when it leads itself to the playoff conversation, nothing is going to change right this second other than, do their views on the college football playoff change? Because when they last talked about this, the commissioners, the Big Ten was stuck on automatic qualifier. If I'm the Pac-12 right now, I'm stuck on automatic qualifier. I want my conference champion guaranteed a spot, because what's left? You know, who are your best teams? Probably Utah and Oregon if they stay, right? So what if they don't? You want a seat at the table, right? In a 12-team playoff. So I don't know if that changes. I haven't had a chance to talk to George about that. And does the SEC and the Big Ten, do their positions change? I'm not sure, but I know it's a quiet time as far as expansion talks go. And man, we got to get into the Rose Bowl too, Adam. I know we don't know the answers to that, but what a blow to the Rose Bowl. And they were concerned that it was one of the biggest hangups about playoff expansion. Everybody's always walking on eggshells trying to protect the Rose Bowl. And then who sends it the gut punch? It's all leagues. It's all, I mean, it's just remarkable to me. So I wonder how that will all play out. But at the very least, you would think that the playoff probably doesn't have to worry so much anymore about keeping the Rose Bowl happy, because that's a mess.
It really is. And that, again, that's part of that collateral damage that I was talking about that makes this realignment move a little bit different from the others, is because these two leagues are tied into the most famous bowl game that wants to have, you know, certain concessions and probably deserves that. But will it in the future, given what types of matchups it will produce? I think there was a picture, I think George Kliavkov tweeted, I was trying to find it yesterday, of he and Kevin Warren with their arms around each other at some Rose Bowl meeting, you know, either in the winter or late in the fall. And, you know, again, that what's that picture going to look like now? What's that Rose Bowl relationship going to look like now? And, you know, you talk to these commissioners more than anyone on our staff, and I'm so fascinated to see how the dynamics change given what's happened in the past year between the release of the college football playoff 12-team proposal for the future. Then you have the realignment with Texas and Oklahoma going to the SEC and the broken trust there. Then you have these series of unproductive meetings that lead to, hey, we're not expanding right now. Then you have the formation of the alliance between the Big Ten, Pac-12, and ACC. And now you have the news on Thursday of the Big Ten plucking, you know, two of the biggest brands, arguably the two biggest brands from the Pac-12. And it's a question that I ask a lot of people. It's like, how are these guys going to work together going forward? The Big 12, by the way, has a new commissioner who just started his duties earlier this week. But that relationship between Kevin Warren and George Kliavkov, I brought that up to someone earlier today, and they were like, well, that was like just meeting somebody at the bar. It's not like these guys have been, you know, together for 10 or 15 years. And, you know, but they're going to have to work together in some respects, whether it's the Rose Bowl, whether it's the CFP, some of the big issues around the sport. How do you think this realignment and situation impacts that relationship and then the overall mood in the room going forward, with especially those five power commissioners? And you can throw in Jack Swarbrick from Notre Dame as a sixth.
So I think it will play out in very similar fashion to what happened with Bob Boolsby, where there was a clear fracture in the trust. There were a lot of emotions. There was anger and frustration. But at the end of the day, they were able to sit down at a table together in the same room and do their jobs. And while I do believe that it all played a role in derailing college football playoff expansion, certainly, I also think that George Kliavkov is a professional. He's smart, and he's got to do his job and continue to do what's best for the Pac-12. And that's going to be working with those other commissioners. He has to do that. He has to continue to have that professional relationship. But I mean, I remember talking about Boolsby when that happened, and mistrust was so high. I asked him, who do you trust? And he said, myself. And I feel like it's a very similar situation. Again, I haven't talked to George and asked him these questions. But that's my sense, is that the dust will settle. Again, because they're not at the table right now voting, and this isn't an immediate concern, it's very different. When I talked to George, he said they were in the process of going through with the 365-day football calendar, talking about the rules, trying to get a consensus on what that looks like in terms of the playoff. and they were still trying to figure out the next steps, which would be the revenue distribution, the Rose Bowl, and then coming to a decision that they could make public. So I think that there's no question relationships are fractured and they're going to be. But I also talked to George about the new Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark, and he knows him. They've worked together before. He's known him for years, actually, because they ran in the same media circles. They have similar backgrounds. And so I think that will be very helpful to have two people in the same room who have a similar shared perspective on media and a different background coming into it. I mean, honestly, George seemed kind of like a blueprint hire for what the Big 12 did, because their media rights are coming up right after the Pac-12.
I guess I wonder, though. I think George Kliavkov made this clear even before Pac-12 championship last year, that he would almost be fine with the five power conferences dictating the future of the playoff, not so much the group of five, or having giving them the same say, or certainly not needing unanimous consent to do anything. I guess I wonder, though, after what happened Thursday, do two members in that room deserve more sway in where this goes? And what's interesting about that is that Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren were not aligned on what should happen to the college football playoff. But now I think we can agree they clearly have the most power in the room. So it's that age old question in college athletics, like, can they work together to figure out something that serves the game? Or is it going to be something that serves the Big Ten and the SEC and everybody else is just going to have to deal with it?
Well, that's what's happening right now, right?
No doubt.
That's how it's operating right now. It's the Big Ten, the SEC. Everybody else has to deal with it. I mean, and when you talk about the power in the room, don't forget Swarbrick has a seat at that table. Gosh, that's a really interesting question. If they do join a conference, does he lose that chair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Immediately.
I mean, well, the reason that he one of the reasons that he has it is because they're a founding partner in it. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a different conversation because they're not engaged right now in those playoff talks, and it's a quiet time. But I think a couple months from now, they're going to have to be, but they're also going to simmer down a little bit.
Last thing, Heather, before we wrap up, will the next round of expansion take place in the next week, in the next 2 months, or are we talking about 6 months to a year before our vacations or whatever else we're doing are so rudely interrupted as mine was yesterday?
I am having a 4th of July party in my backyard, come hell, high water, expansion, rain. I don't care what it is. Fireworks will be going off. And listen, it's nothing is sacred anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when you plan your vacation, what the holiday is, what day in the calendar. Things can happen around any corner. So just be ready for it. I'm not about to predict. My gut says, like I said before, if it comes from the ACC, it's going to take a little bit longer. I don't see Notre Dame rushing into anything. I don't think that decision's imminent whatsoever. My bigger question is probably Pac-12 panic, Oregon, Washington. I guess if I had a guess about an order of events, it would be Pac-12 trying to save itself.
Yeah. I mean, as a Big Ten source told me last night, the likelihood of more is coming, sure, but we need to breathe a little bit and just breathe for the next couple of weeks so we can finish our vacations before ramping up for media days and the college football season. But obviously, huge news. Had to do an emergency podcast. And Heather, thank you for joining me and piloting this this deal through, because it's a crazy time in college athletics, and it's going to likely continue here in the next couple of years as the Super Conference era is definitely upon us. This has been the ESPN College Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and thanks for downloading us.